Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duvernay, your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and in Montecito's Upper Village. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Awesome.
I'm here.
You're rocking and rolling today.
I am just looking forward to talking about one of my favorite subjects, money.
Money. Perfect. So we have in studio with us today Maureen McDermott and an associate. Maureen McDermott from Maureen McDermott and Associates.
Because I don't see any associates.
I don't either. But welcome, Maureen, to the show. She is a realtor at Sotheby's International. So do we have some articles?
We have a plurethra of articles. And I am so happy that I was able to pronounce plurethra.
Plethora.
It. I shouldn't have been bragging because I blew it. So the first article is by someone called Jason Zweig, who
we've never had an article from him before.
I know, first time. This is an interesting article in his Intelligent Investor column. And he said, he begins the article by saying, bit by bit, the myth of the dumb money is dying. A study of clients at Vanguard Group took a look at individual investors and how they make decisions. And what they found is that where Wall Street tends to mock individual investors, they found that this is not necessarily true, that most individuals in a survey they took said that they believe the stock market will return an average of 5.2% over the next 12 months. And most professional managers would, as he said, quote unquote, would rather chew broken glass than to set their expectations that low. And yet investors are pretty stable, as it turns out. They tend not to sell as often as one would expect when the market goes down, and they don't change their expectations as one would expect. They tend to be cautious, in the study, they found that short-term price fluctuations, severe price fluctuations, only had a marginal effect on behavior. And they also found that wealthier investors didn't take more risks than those with less money. So they found a fairly stable constituency of investors not being influenced as by dramatic changes that is the story that most professional investors say about mainstream investors.
Wow, that was a mouthful.
Yes,
well,
it was.
You know, I think at the heart of things, whether you're a professional money manager or a person who does it yourself, you're all people, and you have emotions, and you try to keep them in check, especially if you want to make money in the stock market.
So the next article is called A Tale of Two Yield Curves, and you know we've talked about the yield curve over the last few years, but this article is interesting because there are actually two yield curves that people look at. The yield curve is essentially the difference between interest on short-term borrowing versus 30-year, interest versus short versus long. Well, it turns out there are two different yield curves. There's the comparison of 30 years with 90-day interest rates and the comparison with two-year interest rates. And what they found is that while it's true that the typical, what people typically think of the yield curve, which is 60 or 90 days versus 30-year, has become inverted. And in every recession over the last 40 years, an inverted yield curve, meaning when short-term rates are higher than long-term rates,
has basically been a telltale sign that a recession is on the horizon.
Correct. And what we found here is that if you look at the two-year yield curve, that hasn't been the case. You have not had an inverted curve with the two-year. And the reason for that is that or the speculation for that in this article is that people expect interest rates to change differently over the next 2 years versus the next 90 days. So, for example, there's an expectation among investors that over the next 2 years there'll be a lowering of interest rates, but not necessarily over the next 30 to 60 days. So depending upon which yield curve you are looking at, you could come up with a different prediction as to where the economy is going.
Right. And there's always been speculation the end of last year that the inverted yield curve, is it, if there was a recession, is it in fact the yield curve, or is it because everyone's anticipating a pullback because of the inverted yield curve? The reality is, over time, we've seen that an inverted yield curve leads to a recession on the horizon.
But I think based on this article, we have to talk about the word the yield curve with a phrase, the yield curve that compares 90 days with 30 years and 2 years with 30 years. So there is really two. And if you just generically talk about it, then you're...
Yes and no. But the generic term is the 90-day versus the 30-year. Yeah. And so...
I don't like generics.
That, well, it's not, and that's not even the appropriate word. It's not generic. It's, that is the yield curve. And people can, you know, illustrate articles saying otherwise, but when people are talking about the inverted yield curve, that's the one that they're talking about.
Even in Santa Barbara?
Even in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, because we're far from New York. I just want you to point that out. So this article is entitled, Want to be a 401k Millionaire? Here's what it takes. And what this article talks about is how the volatility in the stock market at the end of 2018 kicked a lot of workers out of the million-dollar club. Fidelity Investment reported that for the fourth quarter of 2018, there was a 28.6% drop in the number of 401k millionaires. By the next quarter, that number jumped by 180,000. Because the stock market went up. So depending upon where the stock market is, you could have more or less millionaires. So the article says talks about.
And that's a fun number, actually. Yeah. When people reach that million-dollar mark in their retirement plans, it's a time where people should pause and congratulate themselves because that's been years of hard work and savings.
Yeah, I mean, that phrase is like I was telling someone on the subway last week, you think you got troubles, my 401k dropped below $1 million.
Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly. It's usually not cocktail party conversation, but yes. But it is a milestone that I think it's important to celebrate, because once you hit that $1 million mark, you start to have compounding interest really doing a lot of hard work for you. Mm-hmm. Instead of you putting in all the dollars, the compounding interest and growth of the your investments will start making up more than your annual limit, which this year is $19,000.
So the article concludes with what you need to do to be a consistent millionaire. And it says, first of all, time. Starting early and having a 30-year period of compounding interest, like you say, is really important. Consistency, that is, they continue to contribute to their 401k plan, even when they're buying a house or having children. They continue the process.
And I have to say, that's the biggest mistake that people make, is they turn it on and off and on and off, because inevitably what happens is they turn off the funding and they forget to turn it back on, or it's never convenient to turn it back on. It's much better to fund a lower amount that you can consistently fund over long periods of time and turn your mind off to it and almost forget that you're funding your 401k.
And the next thing is not leaving free money on the table. So if your employer is willing to match, take the full advantage of that.
Absolutely. There's nothing worse than leaving that free money on the table. If an employer is willing to put in 3% of your overall compensation, at minimum, you should be also putting in 3% of your compensation.
And not afraid of risk, because there are in the market for the long term. Don't get squeamish if the market has a volatile change over a very short period of time.
Well, oftentimes, the younger the worker is, the better it is for the market to have a pullback. Because if you think about it, you're putting in the same amount of money, but you're buying more shares. It's almost as if the market's on sale for you at that time.
So I think we learned something today, didn't we?
We did.
On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner.
And if you're looking to buy a home right now, rates are incredibly low. I have a client who's buying a new home, and they are getting a 3.6% interest rate through Kelly Marsh at Cornerstone Home Lending.
But here's the question, though. How do you find a good real estate broker?
Well, funny you should ask that, Neil. We have in studio with us Maureen McDermott, who is an agent with Sotheby's International Realty, and she has 20-plus years of experience, and she consistently ranks in the top 1% of all agents in Santa Barbara. So Maureen, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. This is always fun to talk about what I love most, which is real estate.
So let's talk a little bit about that. How did you get into the real estate business?
I actually kind of fell into it. I was in banking for 20 years. So I was in finance and moved into mortgage lending. In the 90s, when you were a mortgage lender, the real estate industry insisted, or the mortgage industry actually had you get your real estate license. So we all trooped down and got our real estate license. And that's really, by default, how I got the license.
Oh, you know, it's interesting because brokers at the major brokerage firms for investing also had their real estate licenses. Yeah. So if you worked at one of the big, you know, the Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, Dean Witters, you also had your real estate license.
Yeah.
And so, interestingly enough, you started in mortgage banking. And you got your real estate license just because it was a checkbox that you had to do.
Exactly.
And here you are today, 20 years later.
And here I am. Started my career with commercial real estate and transitioned into residential in the last 20 years.
So what do you like most about real estate?
I love the ability to help people. Typically, when somebody's buying a house, it is one of the largest financial commitments they're going to be making in their lifetime financial career.
Even more important than marriage?
Well, that's not a financial commitment.
Yes,
that's an emotional commitment.
In California, it's a financial decision. It's a community property state.
Hey, yeah, you still moved here.
But, you know, it's – so what I do like about
okay,
it –
okay, how about this? Marriage is number one, your home.
Okay, good.
1A.
Right. Well, I put marriage as an emotional commitment. I put buying a house as a financial commitment. So when you're dealing with somebody – on probably their largest financial commitment, I love the ability to help them and guide an individual into making the right decision for them.
And so I think what's unique about you is that you have such passion about all of your houses. So I've been in a house with you, and you can just see you exude, you know, all the points that you think that the buyer is going to, you know, be able to take advantage of.
Well, thank you for saying that. And it's important because I feel like when I have a listing and I'm in the house, some people say, is this your house? I'm like, oh, no. It just sounds like it's my house because I embrace all the houses. And if I'm working with a buyer, I try and point out all the pros and cons to it. Because I've been in real estate for so long, I can walk into a house and I see things that a buyer or a seller would not notice. And there are a lot of times when I'm working with people that are not from the area and they're a buyer, we have many microclimates in Santa Barbara. You know, those are things that a buyer just wouldn't know.
Right.
You know, school districts, they don't know where they are. They don't know the microclimates. They don't know the nuances of a house. You know, we're a south-facing beach in Santa Barbara. That's very unique to California. So a lot of people come in and say, no, actually, west is over here, south is this way. Those are the little things, points of examples I can give you for sharing and helping people when they're looking for a house.
By the way, that's so true. When I came here, I bought a house 20 years ago when I was on vacation, and I bought the house on Hot Springs, and where the hotel I was staying at, I went up Olive Mill to Hot Springs.
Yeah.
A week later, I ended up back on an airplane to come to do the inspection, and I'm in a rented car driving to down south or down east, and I'm looking for the Olive Mill exit to take me to Hot Springs, and I see a sign saying hot springs on the left. I said, how many hot springs can there be in this town? I said, it must be the same thing. So I drive, get off, and there's a Vons where I think my house is going to be. I said, I bought a house next to a supermarket. I had no idea where I was. I had just decided to make it.
Good to see that you did some due diligence before moving 3,000 miles across the country.
I mean, right. how clueless can you be?
Well, that's part of the job that I do for my in answer to your question. I love just helping the buying and selling process, and I equally divide my time between both listings and helping buyers.
So that was going to be my next question. So you're equally dispersed between buyers and sellers.
Yes, absolutely. It's just the way it happens. I tend to be more of a listing agent, but out of that, of course, people call me, and if that particular listing doesn't work for them, you know, I try and find a home that is appropriate. So it just is where the cards kind of fall. You just wind up being 50-50.
So what are some current trends that you're seeing in the real estate market in Santa Barbara and California?
The trends that I am seeing are that people, because in Santa Barbara we are, for the most part, not every part of Santa Barbara, but Montecito, Hope Ranch, and parts of Santa Barbara are a second home community. So when people move here, they don't necessarily have the time to take on a remodel project. So the trend that I am seeing are that buyers are favoring houses that are already done. They're turnkey. They can just come in with their toothbrush. And so I always encourage my sellers, if they have, maybe a kitchen, they say, I remodeled that. And I said, well, when did you remodel it? And they count back, and it turns out it was 18 years ago. You know, it's an 18-year-old
kitchen. Time does go by fast.
Time goes by really fast. So, you know, I always try and present the listings in the best fashion I can. And then, but what I do notice the trend is people do like to have homes that are redone, or they just have to lightly touch them. Maybe it's just painting or something like that.
And what about the trend of older people to want to live in an apartment and younger people not wanting to buy big houses?
That you're very spot on. And this is something we're seeing more and more as we are an aging population. And Santa Barbara used to be known as the newlyweds and the nearly dead. And that's just a fun term that people used to say. But actually, that's not the way it is anymore, because we do have more industry starting in Santa Barbara and tech industry and whatnot. And it allows people to work here and also work remotely. So we have now that gap between that college age and the retirement community is filling in the population in Santa Barbara. And we have a lot more housing coming on that is actually more affordable as well. So we are becoming a community that can service a lot more people. To answer your question, going back to when people are aging, they are looking to downsize. They're typically looking to downsize into a smaller home, possibly something with less of a garden, something that's a single story, or if it's two-story, put an elevator into it. And you are correct, Neil, the younger folks aren't necessarily looking for the larger homes.
So what's going to happen to all these larger homes?
You know, the same thing that happens with every home. Price will dictate what the market will bear. So if you certainly get onto a price where the market says, well, that's great value, then they'll sell the house.
Now, are you seeing that those larger homes, though, given that we are a bedroom community really for Los Angeles, or that weekend or second home people, are you seeing that the second home market is favoring those larger homes?
No. The second home, when people come to Santa Barbara, the second home market, they all come with a different angle of what they're looking for. Some people are insistent that they have an ocean view. Some people are, I just want the mountain view. Some people want a condo. Everybody comes with what they're looking for.
So kind of an idea of what they want already in their head.
Absolutely. And if they don't, the first thing I do with the buyer is, if they're not familiar with Santa Barbara, or even if they've been here, I say, let's take a tour. I had the pleasure of working for David Pitts when I first started real estate in Santa Barbara. Very luxury, high-end, wonderful family-owned business that was then purchased by Sotheby's in 2005. And Mr. Pitts took us on what he called a romance tour. And to this day, 20 years later, I still do that romance tour. And I have people get in the car, and I take them through Santa Barbara, and I take them through neighborhoods. Because what happens is, yourself, when you're looking, you determine what neighborhood feels comfortable. You discard the ones that don't. You then focus on the ones like, oh, I want to go back and take a second look at that. So I always orient people to what Santa Barbara offers and the different neighborhoods.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, we have Maureen McDermott from Sotheby's International in studio with us talking about real estate. And so what are you seeing in terms of prices and inventory? You had mentioned that we do have a lot of new inventory coming online, especially in Goleta. What is that doing to prices, if anything, really, because we're in such a shortage?
You know, actually, we are running pretty steady with 2018. We will probably see this year a 3% increase of prices from last year. We have about the same inventory. If I'm comparing inventory year to year, we are running approximately 12% up in inventory. Currently, we have 789 on active listings compared to the same time last year, we would have had about 5% less.
So,
inventory is actually up right now.
And do you attribute that to any particular reason or?
Yeah, I do actually. I attribute it to the fact that the last statistic that I read was across the nation, 35% of the people can afford to buy a house. When you only have 65% that have to rent because they can't afford the down payment or whatever, and only 35%, it's all about price and opportunity.
Right.
So when you start to see an increase in inventory and you start to see something I always compare, I love numbers. I guess banking 20 years. You know, if I start to look at the April sales price to the original list price, the April number was 92%. If we compare that to last April, it was 95%. So what that's telling me is that somebody will go on the market and they're getting 92% of their original asking price, whereas last year they were getting 95% of their original. So what it's telling you is that the market, the buyers are not responding to the current prices.
That they're negotiating, so there's
exactly
room to negotiate
exactly
in the listing price.
Exactly. So on the heels of that, what I'm also observing are the new listings that are coming on the market are coming on closer to where they probably should be priced.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
what do you do with a seller that, you know, is very convinced that their house is worth X and the market just isn't bearing it? Have you had to, you know, break up with your seller in order to make that work?
It's very common. You know, I'm always cognizant of the fact that it's not my equity and it's not my house. I am here to guide a seller, and I always explain to them there are two components to sell a house: marketing and price. I'm in charge of the marketing, and I do extensive marketing. I mean, every qualified buyer is going to know about your house. The seller's in charge of the price. Obviously, I'm going to give them guidance, and we look at comparable sales. And when you're in, this is interesting, when you're in a rising market, your last sale is your floor. And you're in a declining market, and I personally think we're in a little bit of a softening market, your last sale is your ceiling.
Oh, interesting.
Okay?
That's an interesting way to look at it.
Oh, no. So what you do is you go look at your souls, and so that's, I let the numbers speak for themselves with a seller. Now, if they choose to say, you know what, I just want to test the market, I'm fine. That's fine. Because again, it's not my money, it's not my equity, and I will still market it fully. When we find that there's no showings or there are showings and no offers, then you know that you have missed the mark.
What do you do about a broker that, in order to get a listing, overestimates the price? And so, a potential seller goes to three brokers, and you give them what's probably a realistic price. Do you ever lose out on the listing because somebody gives a ridiculous price?
Absolutely. Some people say that, and unfortunately, we have a terrific real estate community here. We really do. It's a tight community. We work together. But there's a few folks that do tend to overprice their houses, and a lot of times a seller will say, well, I'm going to go with this person because that's the price. I don't mind, Neil. Sometimes it's not bad to be the person's second broker.
So, right. Well, actually, it makes them probably a better client for you because right. They'll be more apt to listen.
Right.
And now, in terms of putting you hear different theories in real estate about pricing your home very high and then lowering the price versus pricing it low and getting into a multiple bidding situation. What do you see that works the best?
Interesting, because right now I just put a house on the market and we're going to wind up being in a multiple offer situation. What do I think works best? I believe.
And when I say best, I mean what's the best outcome for the seller in terms of getting them the most money out of their home?
Well, I'll explain it the way I always explain it to my sellers. When I say this is really where your house is probably going to sell and they want to try a different price, I have, and this is the hardest thing for a seller to understand, the market will never let you undersell your house. The market is the consumer. The consumer is who determines the price of your house. It's not your agent. It's not you. It is the public out there.
Somebody willing to pay for it.
Somebody willing to pay right. for it. It's all about what are they willing to pay. So it's a hard concept for a seller to understand because they always think they're leaving money on the – not always, but often they think, oh, I might be leaving money on the table. And I explain, no, you won't, because the market just can't let that happen. If they see good value, you will get multiple offers. If you don't get multiple and you just get one offer, you just need one offer, but you need the right offer. And it's not always about the price. It's always about terms as well. So my philosophy, I personally, up north in San Francisco, historically for the last 5 years, they will put a house on the market 10% under the value, and they will let the market determine. It becomes a feeding frenzy. We've all read in the paper, San Francisco, the right. multiple offers. And they price that way on purpose. That is not a style that really is utilized in Santa Barbara. I don't like to do that personally. It becomes uncomfortable. Some buyers will back off because, I just don't want to get involved with that.
How do you advise them and which offer do you choose? You know, when my husband and I made our first offer on a home here, you know, we were told that we should put a picture and a letter and, you know, describe how we want to raise our family in this house in the whole nine yards. And I thought to myself, oh, my goodness, I thought this was a business transaction.
No, and you know what? That works. Because don't kid yourself. Real estate is emotional. It's not just financial. It's emotional. Commercial real estate is financial. Residential real estate is emotional. And that's why your agent said, write a letter. Talk about yourself, because when a seller has multiple offers, how are they going to decide? It is price, it's terms, and who do we want next to be in our family home? And they look at those letters. I encourage all of my clients when we're in that situation to do just the same thing.
So now, what do you advise your sellers? How do you advise them to evaluate the multiple offers? So you have a listing right now with multiple offers on it. Do you advise just strictly on the terms?
It's a combination. It's a total combination of price and terms. And sometimes price isn't always what wins out. It can be terms. And that's the thing that makes a difference. Are they getting a loan? Are they paying cash? I would say probably 35%. Well, it differs in Montecito, for example, 35% of all of our sales in Montecito are cash. And it's a little bit less in Santa Barbara, but that can vary.
that can sway
a little bit.
A seller to
a
choose
seller,
your
well,
offer.
They're getting a loan. So you look at all the terms. You look at all the terms.
What about if I was selling my house and offered to stay in one of the bedrooms? Would that be
That might be a deal breaker, Neil. Depending on the buyer.
Well, but if I hit it off with a buyer, you know, as an extra, you know, you talk about relationships and the psychology.
Would your dogs be staying too?
My dogs too.
Well, yeah, of course. But you know, actually, I have been with a lot of my sellers. Were like, we're not quite sure where we're going to go. I said, well, that's fine. Let's just ask to lease back the property. You know, so those are part of the terms. And some people can do that. Oh, no, we need the house right away. A buyer, and some people are like, yeah, we could let them stay for 90 days or whatever. So again, all those terms and the price all come up to the helping you make a sound decision.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back. Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
So, Maureen, last month there was an economic forecast that UCSB always puts on every year, and it was interesting to me to see that Hope Ranch was an area within Santa Barbara County that people were paying over market pricing, and Montecito was still in that negotiated, you know, range of things that they were going under listing. How much do you think that the mud flow and the Thomas Fire had an impact on that Montecito, the pricing? Because when I first moved here, it was probably right. The reverse.
A very correct assessment. It did impact real estate values in Montecito and actually continues to impact. Hope Ranch in 2018 had the best year they've had in a very long time, because many of the buyers that were looking in Montecito, just for their own emotional reasons or whatever, did purchase in Hope Ranch. So as I say, Hope Ranch had a bumper, fabulous year in 2018. 2019, they're humming along. They're doing fine. Montecito has had a number of sales, but our sales price to original list price has definitely decreased from the previous year. A lot of times in Montecito, people are concerned now about what we call the red zone.
Right. Explain to us, you know, if you find a home in the red zone that you like, now, can you get insurance? How does it all work?
Oh, insurance, that's a big question right now. And the red zone is not a death sentence for a house. So I want to be very clear to your listeners that is not, I have listings in the red zone. They sell. It's okay. The red zone is an indication of where you might be asked to evacuate if there is a rain level that is determined by the powers to be. And right now, the red zone map, which is an evacuation map, is going to be revisited in the fall. And it has been the belief of many that are involved that red zone is going to be greatly reduced.
So now, what do you say to a seller who owns a home in a red zone looking to put it on a market? Are they having to take a discount on those houses? Yes.
Unfortunately, yes, they are.
What about insurance? Can they get insurance?
Neil, again, a very good question. The insurance, we have been very successful, and I have many insurance brokers that I work with that I'm happy to share with you the names if any of your listeners want to call you and ask you and say, hey, who was Maureen talking about? We'd love those names. Insurance has become an issue, actually not just for Montecito. It's an issue for Santa Barbara.
And I think it's actually greater than that. It's an issue for California.
The state of California.
Given the amount of fires that we've had and destruction, that the insurance companies are evaluating their
risk.
But
it's so typical of insurance companies. Yeah. The apparently Montecito hadn't had a fire like this for 100 years. Now that everything's burnt out, there's not going to be probably a fire in Montecito in our lifetime. And now the insurance companies are pulling out. So for 100 years, they insured us with all this brush. Now that it's safe, they won't insure it. Just ridiculous.
It is. But it actually, to take it to another level, and I'll give you my own personal, I'm insured by a well-known insurance company. And I said to my husband, right now we're remodeling our home, not because of any damages, but just because I've been in a remodel for 11 months. So we've been living elsewhere, and we have a certain type of insurance on our home that we own. Because we're not living there, you have to get different kind of insurance. And I told my husband, I said, you know, I'm kind of concerned because our very good insurance company is pulling out of Santa Barbara. He goes, no, we've never had a claim. And we had no claim, and we're fine. And
did you get the cancellation notice?
We live in Eucalyptus Hill, which isn't even in Montecito. Right. He goes, we're fine. I said, you better call our agent just to make sure because we're moving back in 3 weeks. He said, you're not going to believe it. They're not renewing us. I said, I told you. Hello, I'm in real estate, Marty. Listen to me sometimes.
Well, think of all the money you'll save. You won't have to pay a premium.
No. Yeah. So now we're getting new different insurance, and it is out there. But this is not, again, it's not just Red Zone. It's not just Montecito. It is Santa Barbara. And as you were saying, it's
the state of California. Right. So now when...
And let me go back. Excuse me. And partly what's happened is the insurance companies have reached their capacity. So when they reach their capacity, for example, let's say we had 62 insurance brokers that would offer Lloyd's of London. We're down to 22. Chubb has pulled out. And, you know, without naming other companies, Travelers is pulling out. Not with everybody, but it's coming. And people say, well, I haven't been canceled yet, and I'm with that company. Oh,
they haven't hit their
renewal
yet.
When does your annual renewal come?
Right.
So I had that conversation this morning with the client. He goes, "Oh, I'm with Chubb." And I said, "I'm just letting you know. Be cognizant. You may have to be looking in October when your renewal comes up."
Right.
And this too shall pass.
Absolutely.
You know, I was in L.A. when they had the Northridge earthquake years ago. Same thing happened, and they all came back 5 years later.
So now, in terms of kind of the flip that people like to buy the house and flip it, and given that buyers are really looking for that turnkey solution, are people able to do the flip like they used to and be able to make money pre-2008?
Yes, they can. What you can't do is buy a house and do a cheap flip and then put it on the market for 30% more. You know,
right.
The price always has to match the product, no matter if it's a flip or if it's just going on the market. That's what you really have to, your takeaway is the price has to match the product. So if you want to buy a house, you see a good value and you want to fix it up, absolutely. But don't do it on the cheap and then think you can ask, you know, gold standard pricing.
So could we talk about the industry? There seems to be less and less restaurants and more real estate brokers in town.
And he notices this because he eats out often.
I eat out rather than sell my house. So, you know, I think in terms of listings, it must be a real advantage to be at Sotheby's because you get people who are moving from New York or from Chicago, and the broker that they've been dealing with at Sotheby's says, who can I use in Santa Barbara? So I guess, first of all, being at a firm like Sotheby's is probably an advantage.
Thank you. It is. Sotheby's is a global brand. And has 35,000 agents worldwide, and they are known as the luxury listing or brokerage. However, that being said, our average median price with Sotheby's around the world is, I think, $1.2 million. And a lot of times people come and say, oh, you don't want my listing because I'm not, you know, fancy big house. I'm like, no, Sotheby's sells everything. We just offer premium service.
Which seems like a great deal,
exactly.
Even if your price is
exactly
premium price.
And the digital for Sotheby's, the digital reach that Sotheby's has is extraordinary, is absolutely extraordinary.
But one of the things that's really emblematic of the whole industry that's changing is you look at a for sale sign, and it's the broker's name on top now.
Yes.
And then in small writing, it's the brokerage firm.
Correct.
So there's a sort of a branding tension that's taking place where the top brokers are calling themselves by their own names. And so other than referrals and a better computer program, the impact or the benefit of the brokerage firm seems to be reduced.
I think that is a very astute observation.
Let her finish. We have she's got words of wisdom here.
No,
I'm sorry, we're running out of time. So,
What happens? No, Neil is very astute.
I want to hear more compliments.
No, that's right. She said astute. Yes. That's why I interrupted.
I am astute. Don't ask another question, Diane. Please.
Just say it again.
About Neil's
in fact, don't even
brilliance.
Answer the question. Just say it was an astute.
No,
question.
What happened is the trend started about 8 years ago. That, and I think a lot of realtors have real estate coaches or life coaches, and they were like, the emphasis became start a team, become a team, and or put the emphasis on your own brand. And that started 8 years ago, and now you have all these different names. And I think it can be confusing to the public. The takeaway is, yes, you're hiring an agent. You are hiring the brand also. And so that's important. But
that said, though, I think that it's more important who you're working with, the individual, as opposed to the company. And I think that has been coming across industries because one company hires a whole host of people. The person you choose to work with is the person that's going to have your back. So I think as a buyer or a seller, I think it's more important for them to connect with you, Maureen, as an individual and what your business is and how you do business than necessarily whether you're at Sotheby's or a different brokerage.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment. By Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence. Before the break, we were talking about how good my question was.
Yes. It was a great question, and Diane really summed it up. It really matters that you have an agent who do you want to be in a transaction with? Who do you want negotiating for you? At the end of the day, let's say your house doesn't sell right away, or you're a buyer and you don't find something right away, who do you want to still be looking at 5 months from now? And who do you want to work with? And that's really what you need to
do. I want a great tribute to the brokers in this community is whenever I have dinner at someone's house, not whenever, but many times I have dinner in someone's house and they say, I want you to meet my real estate broker that sold me my house 20 years ago. There's this relationship that gets created with people and they kind of bond in this community with their broker.
Yeah. Well, I think at the end of the day, any business, it's about the relationship and life in general is about the relationship and who you want to work with and who shares your value system to get you at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's very true. But I also agree the reason why people want you to meet their realtor, there is a fascination in Santa Barbara with real estate values. And that is why I think when you go to a cocktail party or wherever, real estate always comes up.
Well, and it's the only place where everyone asks each other, so how much did you buy your house for?
That
would be appropriate.
They don't
even
have to ask. They just look online now.
Where I come from in New York, people said, what do you do? As a way of figuring out where you fit in the economic stratum. Here it's a little more subtle. They say, where do you live and when did you buy your house?
So, Maureen, if someone's listening and they wanted to get to know you a little better for a transaction, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, they can call me at 805-570-5545, or they certainly can look at my website, maureenmcdermott.com, and you'll get a kind of a sense of who I am.
Let's talk for a minute about your marketing, because I think your marketing is far exceeds many real estate agents in town, and you do a really great job at it.
Thank you.
So tell us what made you go in that direction.
I believe when I am representing a seller and I want their house marketed the way I would want my house marketed, I always tell them, first of all, we don't go on the market until they're ready, that the house is ready. You have one chance to be a new listing, so we don't go on the market until it presents perfectly to the level that we all agreed that we're going to take it to. Then we go on the market, and then it's my job to make sure that all the qualified buyers out there know about it. I do believe in social media. I have a strong presence on social media, Instagram, Facebook, videos. Sotheby's has their branding digitally. And I do also believe in print advertising. I believe that it's important to hit every aspect of the marketing. And I take beautiful pictures. It has to start with a beautiful picture to entice someone to even want to call. So I'm big on my print advertising. I'm big on online advertising until that house is sold. I don't stop.
No, and I think you do a good job at also marketing the statistics of the community. Your email campaign is very, I don't know if it's effective, but it's very, very nicely done. And I think you do a great job on the marketing front.
Well, thank you so much, Maureen, for being here. You were so impressive. I don't want to leave, but maybe I should sell my house.
Well, I know a good realtor.
Anyway, thank you for being here. And thank you for listening. You've been listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you next week.